Good evening, friends. This is Carolyn Evers. Delighted to share some time with you this evening. I'm going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, and that is the lines that flow energy through the earth that we know of, ley lines. How the ancients used this energy, how the Templars used it in building the Gothic cathedrals, and actually why all of this is important to us today. And you might think, well, that's ancient history. But in a sense, it isn't, because we are seeing so many cycles. And this is a cycle that is repeating itself, in the sense that there are things that we have forgotten that was in the past. It was buried for a particular reason, and now it's coming forth again because humanity is ready for it. If those out there have some memories of these times, or have some things that you want to share with our audience, give us a call at 877-876-5227. Ley lines have become relatively important and known in this century because we have people who have used the process of dowsing, number one, to become aware of them, and number two, to actually map them out. And they're probably best known in England, because we have several people who have actually done maps where they have laid them all out, and it is just really fascinating how they connect to the sacred sites. And this has become a topic of great interest, I do believe. Now, what's very helpful to me is that I have a lot of memories from past lifetimes, but I also have the incredible support of being able to read the earth records through the cherubim. And they work with the Akashic records. They're located in the center of the cosmos. And this information that we're discussing this evening comes from things that I remember, that I'm drawn to, and the information that I've gotten from the different readings that I have done in asking particular questions of the cherubim. Now, this is, I think, fascinating. We're going to start with this. What we've done today is, as I said, located these lines because we have doused for them. But the ancients, these individuals that came pre-history, before we started writing history here in this world, came at the breakup of Atlantis. And this was one group. There were others, but we're going to discuss this particular group. And they came with the third eye open. They were aware. They were able to see things, to hear things, and to feel things of earth energy that today we do not see and hear unless we're using our intuition through dowsing. But those who do have a third eye open can actually see these energies, hear them, see the cosmic flow interact with the magnetic energies from the planet. And I've had the great joy to work with someone who actually saw these patterns, described them, and we worked with them, and it was a great deal of fun. And so this is what, in the very beginning, the ancients saw and heard and worked with. Now, from that came some fire festivals. And we're going to look in England at these. There were four major festivals, spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And there were ceremonies that they went through lighting a fire when the sun just came over the horizon at certain parts of the year. Now, at that period of time when the people's third eye was opened, they actually used these particular periods for the gathering of this energy. We're going to talk a little bit about this energy and what it was and the reason behind that. But to finish a thought, after people became more involved with technology, the third eye started to close, and they no longer remembered these energies from the past, but they continued with the fire festivals. So after a period of time, it became something that was fun that they would do, but really had forgotten the knowledge behind all of this. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, but I had to go to the cherubim for this particular information. And so I had asked from the records. We were talking about the energies and the fire festivals. And what the cherubim said is that the ancients understood the effect that the energies from these four periods of time had on the physical and on the fertility of the earth. And they understood that there was a cosmic inflow into the universe and into this solar system, and that this energy had healing involved with it. It was also an energy of procreation and fertility for the earth. Now, today, I had asked the cherubim about that because I wanted a little better understanding of the energy that we were talking about and the cycles that was involved in this. And so my question to them was, how do the ley lines and the cosmic energy contribute to the fertility of our planet? And they went back and explained how the cosmic energy is a building block of all creation, and it comes from source, or all there is in the center of the cosmos. And this energy comes down upon all creation, no matter what galaxy we exist in, or whether one lives in other dimensions than us. And so they explained that it's necessary for these energies to be renewed occasionally. Now, they talk about two different forces. And the one force that they talk about is how creation is in balance, and it is the sound of vibration that's carried by the cherubim as it makes a complete circle throughout the whole cosmos back to source, and that it is this vibration that balances creation, and it's counterbalanced by stars, planets, and any other force and creation in the cosmos. So the one thing that we're going to be talking about, or that we've just mentioned, is that and we've discussed this before, and it's just beautiful, how vibration comes from source, how the cherubim pick up this vibration, and they bring it through the entire cosmos and go back to source. So we have that vibration that is working. Then there is this second force or energy that must be refreshed annually and actually quarterly, and we call them the equinox and the solstices. And they point out that this isn't the same energy that the cherubim carry, which is the vibratory band that sustains cosmos, but It's a renewable force that's found in the human physical and the seasonal changes on the planet, and they identify this as prana. And so they are telling us, yes, prana does exist all the time, but at these four periods of time, that there is a greater influx of prana into the entire cosmos, and it follows a cycle. And here it is like the heartbeat of the planet, and it acts as a surge, but a timed one. Now, I found this very fascinating. Perhaps you will too, because they're telling us that, reminding us rather, that the physical replaces the cells in the body about every 7 years. We'll have different organs replacing cells, and it takes about 7 years to replace all these cells. And they indicate that this is also linked into the pattern of this cycle that we're talking about, and that this pattern of the influx or the increase of prana into the system also follows a seven-year cycle, and that there is a cyclical high where these energies are more intense. Keeping this subject in mind, but just referring to something, I was out west U.S., and saw some of the ancient sites where the American Indians had painted and carved things into rocks, and there were a lot of spirals. Nobody quite understood. I haven't found anything anywhere myself where there is some description of what these spirals mean, but it seems to be a common pattern that there is spirals in our ancient artwork of some sort. And the cherubim are alluding to this, and they're also alluding to these cyclical patterns that we're talking about. And what they're saying is basically that we have this seven-year cycle where more intense prana comes into the planet, and that the ancients, what they did is they were involved in a counting process. And so how they actually made a record of this, how this energy would come in, they placed markers in their temples which would show when a solar equinox was present. And I saw some fascinating pictures of this. They're all over the world, actually. I'm sure you've seen them places, too, where at a solar equinox, a shaft of light might go inside of a temple of some sort, or it might go into a temple that was dug in the ground with a dome over the top. And so the shaft would go through a certain formation and then hit a pattern on the back wall of the temple or on the back wall of the subterranean room. And so this was the marker to the ancients to let them know that this was the high, not necessarily the high cycle, but this was the equinox. And then they would count the years with the spirals. So they had the markers on the temple that would show the solar equinox, and then they would portray the designs so that their people knew what year it was in the annual cycles and whether they were ready to approach the cyclical high. And, of course, naturally, I had to ask, why were the ancients so interested in becoming aware of the cycles? And it was their answer, I thought, was very fascinating, too, is that they would use their mental powers, the mind, to direct more of the energy into the physical body and into the earth itself, and especially into their crops and water supply. And so if we think about this, during these solstices and equinox periods, it would also be beneficial for us to mentally direct this energy into our physical bodies during this time. And so what they are saying basically is that if we cooperate with nature in all of its physical forms, that we're going to benefit from it physically and also direct it into the planet, so that the planet will become produce more crops and energize the water supply. So getting back to the history a little bit, that sort of was the background. The ancients were aware of the energy cycles. They counted them, the years. They were interested in rejuvenating the physical. They were interested in rejuvenating the earth, and they were very dedicated to this. Then there came a period of time when the ancients forgot. It was not something that they wanted to write down because they saw power in this, and it was information that was passed on one to another in a verbal form rather than a written form, because it was always that danger that they didn't want to allow this information to somebody who would abuse it. So it laid for a while without people knowing about it, until we get to the time of the Templars. And there is a lot of information coming forward with the Knights Templar in movies and in books. Some of it I would agree with, and some of it I wouldn't. But it makes interesting reading, and it makes some interesting movies. The Templars, the individuals who first started to become aware that there was a deposit of information, lived in an area of France where, again, their home was located. Well, in England, they would call it a ley line. From what I gather, in France, it had a different name to it, but it meant the same thing. The house was located on an energy line, and this particular knight understood what this energy meant. And because the house was on this energy line, it rejuvenated or helped him to remember some of the power that was involved with an energy place, and especially where two lines crossed, where the energy spun and became even stronger. And so from little up, he lived with this until eventually he started to remember, and in that memory gathered some other individuals with him who started working with the energies and remembered that it would be very important for them to get back to Jerusalem because there was a deposit of information there that they knew was available. Now, as a little sidebar to this, one of the reasons that this particular knight was aware that this was very important is because he was one of the monks who, in a previous life, wrote down the information and was aware of where the location was of this deposit. And so it is fascinating that this particular knight, through many of his reincarnations, worked with this information. And so he took several knights with him and they actually found this deposit of information. Now, there's a lot of stories about this. And after reading them, sifting through them, I'm inclined to think that this particular deposit of information was started, placed there earlier in a temple by those, part of those souls that were fleeing Atlantis. They were aware that the land was going to break up, and becoming aware of that, they wanted to pass on some of the greatest information that they worked with, mathematics, information about energy. And what could they possibly do? They were aware that lands were going to break up, and so where would this be safe? And so they built a temple. They built this ancient temple, and they carved the information on the columns on the temple. And we had flooding, we had damage to the land, and ultimately this very ancient temple, which was on a hill, you might say the land eroded, and the temple portions and the columns were now underneath of the earth. And later on, after years went by, King Solomon chose a particular place to build his temple. And the story goes that in the building of his temple, as they were digging the foundations, there were individuals who fell through a hole, deeper hole in the ground, where they found this information on the columns. Not the information so much, but they saw the columns down there, not knowing what the information was. But King Solomon knew. And so we're building a thread of where he takes this information along with other information, and it is deposited in this place. A lot of history passes, and eventually these Templar Knights became aware of the fact that there was this cache of information there. Some of it was from memories, retrieving memories from past lifetimes. Part of it was reading Akashic records, but nevertheless, they did make that journey, and they did find this information. And the great part of this information was the mathematical information, and also information about the energy lines and the vortexes. And the Knights living on a vortex understood it, and they realized how to use it by retrieving the mathematical formulations and bringing them back to France when there became this tremendous building process of the Gothic cathedrals. And I don't know if you've been fortunate enough to be in Europe and see these Gothic cathedrals at first hand, to see the size, to see how they're laid out, to see the magnificence of what they are. It is quite an accomplishment when you realize that we're talking about perhaps a 60-year period where most of this building was done. And what is so fascinating about all of that is how they divided the labor, how they chose the site, how they coordinated the different guilds, and how these individuals in the guilds worked at a certain location, did their job, moved on to another location. It was very well organized. And to imagine that all of this building was done in a relatively short period of time. Of course, there were fires that happened to it in later years, and there was repair work done. But the first initial blush of building process was done in a relatively short period of time. And when you see the size of the stones that were put into place and the way it was put into place, it is quite magnificent. And it even becomes more incredibly magnificent when you start to realize how the glass was made that went into the windows, how they ground precious stones like the rubies and the sapphires, and mix them in the glass and put them in the windows. Each one of these things had a particular purpose, and what that purpose was to elevate the human physical. Yes, there was this sacredness, this sacred connection to the God force, and it was the attempt to unite the soul with the spirit as it integrates into matter. This was a very deep and involved process, a very sacred process, because they had sacred information that they couldn't announce to the world. We were in a period of time when this kind of information could not have been given out to anyone because there was a power force in play. It was a period of time when people had to keep secret their information, but to be able to offer it to the world in a manner that the world could accept it. And so we have a lot of secret information in the carvings, in the geometric proportions of windows, of distances of pillars, in distances from the spires that went on the top of the cathedrals to the bottom of the cathedral, in the very foundation where there was a sacred spring of water. And so it was with great reverence, with great knowledge and great love that these buildings were put up. And it was done for the sake of humanity so that they could bring back into the physical those gifts that were lost so long ago. This came from an interesting website, and I love this because they're talking about sacred geometry and how it is used in such places. And this one sentence I just thought was so beautiful. It is the study of the way that spirit integrates into matter. And that is what they were attempting to do, to integrate spirit into matter and to help align the resonance of body, mind, and spirit with the harmonic frequencies of the above and the below. And so this is why you see so many sacred geometrical ratios in these cathedrals, because it means that the participant, the individual who is there in that space, is going to resonate or vibrate at the appropriate rate that maximizes the possibility of connection to the One. I thought that was very beautiful, and it talks about the ratios and the geometry of it, and it's not something that we can really go into on the radio because it's not a vehicle where we can actually see the diagrams and understand the ratios. So for those of you who might want to comment on this or have had some interesting experiences at some of the sacred sites, whether it is in Europe, in the Gothic cathedrals, whether it is here in Sedona, in some of the sacred caves, The number here is 877-876-5227. I invite you, please, to call in and share your stories. I haven't found a time yet when I have been able to go to a sacred site someplace and not have something extraordinary happen, because I do believe, my friends, that it is a place where the physical meets the spiritual, where we are actually able to come to that force that we understand as God. We're getting into another aspect. I want to just move to another section of this story, because we talked about humanity becoming aware of the earth energy in the form of ley lines or vortexes. And so my next question to the cherubim was something that I wanted to know is, how do we utilize this power and this energy? We can take dowsing rods and we can walk over the earth and we can actually track where these lines are. We can actually move along and see where two lines cross one another. And the ancients have built some sacred building there. Or in the Middle Ages, they have built a Gothic cathedral there. And they were very much aware of these places, and especially where two lines intersected with one another. Many of these places have the names, especially through England and France, they have the names of Michael in the name of the church, or Mary. So they would be dedicated to Mary, dedicated to Archangel Michael, and they were the structure above ground that was marking what was under the ground. And the names of the cathedral had to do with what kind of line that they were pointing out. So let's take for a second, a moment, and let's look into that and discuss what was the power. How was this utilized? And so what the cherubim tell us is that it took a long time for humanity to even become aware enough so that they could recognize the energy of the earth. And once they became aware of it, they had to be spiritually advanced enough to utilize the energy. Now, they talk a little bit about the human body, how it is a container for the soul. And going back to the time of Atlantis, it was what we would call an androgynous soul, where both the male, the female aspect of it, the yin and yang, were one. And in Atlantis, at the fall of Atlantis, that these two aspects of the soul were separated. And they tell us that when this separation occurred, that what happened was there was a connection. When we were androgynous, we had a connection that led to the center of the cosmos, that we can actually trace that. We could actually trace our history back to the beginning of our soul, what we know of as the creation of souls. And when we no longer were androgynous, that connection was broken, and we forgot that. I feel so sad when I hear of that, even talking about it now, because I have a wispy memory of that, what it felt like when that connection was broken. It was a devastating state of affairs to go from being able to trace back to the time when your soul was actually created until the place that we find ourselves now. Suddenly, all of that history has been forgotten. And so the cherubim talk about when the souls were created, that they had abilities that reflected the source or all that is. And they were all available to the souls in a diluted form, but we were given a promise that these abilities could be strengthened during our advancement and growth in our spiritual body. And so, before we were divided, the two poles were divided, we had many more abilities than we have now because our memories were intact. We remembered the past. We remembered how to utilize some of the abilities of our soul. Now, they go in to explain that some of the abilities was the ability to move between dimensions, that we could master, like here we have time and space, that we were able to master time and space in this realm. These were two of the abilities that we had before we forgot. And so the ancients who had that third eye opened, who before that division, they had that memory of this long line of events. They also knew later that if these energies were worked with, that they could be in many dimensions, and they would remember how to do this. And in the physical, we could be in one place, and the soul could bilocate to another. And so, in addition to this, we could bilocate. If we look at some of the spiritual writings, it has been written how some souls were able to do this, that we have people actually witnessed this, where individuals seem to be in two places at one time. So with great spiritual work, like meditating and fasting, people and a very open heart chakra, people are able and have been able to remember to do some of these things, but it's not a common thing. So I guess we still have a lot of work to do. And so they go on to say that the Templars found this information in the records, that they could see that the answers to renewing this memory was represented in a form of geometry that you call sacred. And so they knew that working with sacred geometry, putting them in a building, would be the first step that we could take to remember the past. Some of the things that they did is they carved clues in the buildings so that as people were starting to remember these things, they could decipher the messages, even though there was not a teacher to show them the way. They knew that Chartres, the cathedral at Chartres in France, was on a direct energy line to Egypt, and that a great deal of this energy came into this planet through Egypt and was transferred along that energy line. There were certain things that were done in the Gothic cathedrals, I am told, that the electromagnetic energy, as it came up from the interior of the planet, was collected in the great vault inside the cathedral. But that was the purpose for the vaulting system there. The we're not aware of this now because the roofs aren't made in this fashion. But when the cathedrals were originally built, they were made out of wood. They've since had fires. The wood has been destroyed, and when it was replaced, it wasn't replaced with wood again. It was replaced with something that people thought would be more sturdy. The cathedral there has a metal roof on it at the moment. But when it was wood, the cosmic energies would come into the cathedral, and it acted as a reed instrument, just like we have a reed in a reed instrument here. So the cosmic energy came through. It worked with the electric magnetic energy that was collected in the vault system, and the two were able to interchange with one another to be utilized by the person inside of the cathedral. Underneath of Chartres, and I don't know if this is true of the other cathedrals, but perhaps it is, because there seems to be, along with many of these energy lines, water of some sort. So that you're familiar with the stories of the sacred wells or springs. And underneath Chartres, there was also a stream of water that runs underneath. And this also carried the energy concentrated in that water, the electromagnetic energy. And so the spire, the distance of the spire that is over the doorway when you go into Chartres Cathedral, as the distance from the top of the spire down to the doorway is the same distance from the doorway down to the water underneath of the cathedral. And this acted upon the heart chakra. The pilgrim would come in through that door, and he would stand in the doorway, and the cosmic energies would come down through the spire, down to the doorway where he was standing, and they would be met by the electromagnetic energies that came up from the bottom, and the two met at the heart chakra. And this is how the pilgrim would start his pilgrimage, so that it had an effect, or what hopefully the effect that it would have would be to open the heart chakra before he began his journey inside of the cathedral, because there was a method, there was a path that the pilgrim took once he got inside of the cathedral. He had a certain path that he would take around the pillars as he was inside of the cathedral, and in essence, he was following this particular path. It had to do with the energy that was underneath of the cathedral, and it had to do with him being able, or she being able, to utilize this. So if you have some memories or you've had some experiences, do call in and share them with us at 877-876-5227. And if you're from Canada, 888-810-8322. There was several layers of information, like it always is. There is something that we see on the surface. And in this particular case, what we saw in the surface was this magnificent cathedral dedicated to God, to his mother. I know if you haven't been to a cathedral, you have certainly seen pictures of them, but they didn't exactly look that way to the pilgrims of the Middle Ages, because the statues that adorned the outside were painted. It wasn't a stone statue that you saw like you see today. The stone has gotten dark from soot over the many years. When the person in the Middle Ages would have seen this, the stone would have been white. It would have been beautiful. All of the carved statues on the outside would have been painted. The crowns on the statues would have been would have looked like gold. They would have been painted in a gold paint. And the same way on the inside, I can't imagine what that must have looked like to see the inside of that cathedral with this white, beautifully white stone, with these gorgeous colored glass windows. In the brilliance of the beauty of what they are, it had to be an incredible thing to see. I've been inside of cathedrals at different times when the sun was at different angles, and at different angles the light comes through these stone windows through the colors. It is just so incredibly beautiful. What it does for the eye, what it does for the heart, what it does for the soul. In the evening, when the sun is setting, I can't explain to you what it looks like to see the setting sun shining through the rose windows and to see these colors and the effect that it has on your mind and on your heart and on your soul. It is an incredible sight. And so all of this was built with the idea that was the surface to, that was the surface truth, that people could see something beautiful. They could acknowledge their spiritual selves. They had pictures of the life of Jesus and Mary and the saints. And they weren't real educated that they could read things, but they could see this in the illustrations of the different statues. Then there was another group. And in this particular group, they were more aware of the meaning of the sacred geometry. They understood the mathematics. They understood how things were laid out. They understood the different times of the year, how the energy would be heightened. They also understood how being there at certain times of the year when these energies were activated, that if they could open their heart centers and if they could pray, that they would receive gifts that they were there looking for. So there was this second layer of awareness. Then there was a third, deeper layer. And in that third, deeper layer was probably a very small percentage of people who studied the truths, who understood all that we are saying with regards to the geometry, and they worked with this year-round to the point that they prepared the spiritual in such a manner that they could bilocate. And we wonder what happened to some of those Templar Knights when the terrible day came that they were they were attacked and were going to be killed and held hostage. And we wonder where so many of them escaped and where their precious artifacts were. Well, they took many of them, took them with them. They literally left this dimension. They are on another dimension, some of them. Some of them were able to get to their ships and move to other countries. But there were a small percentage of them that, working with the secrets of the cathedral, actually knew how to ascend with their physical to go into another dimension where they are now. I wanted to know how healing was involved with the energies, because the cosmic energy is, I think it would be important to understand how these energies could come and how we could use them for healing. And what the cherubim tell us, that the cosmic energy is encapsulated in a code that contains a thread of healing, among other attributes. The healing can be accessed if one knows how to access this energy. It is for this reason that the ancients used the priest and priestess of their spiritual systems to act as a go-between, so to speak, to prepare the recipient and to connect the energy to the individual. This process is not understood today, and one has to follow much cleansing through meditation and opening up the heart center to access this energy and to release the healing in the codes. The initiates of old had open heart centers and were ready for this healing energy. It is for this purpose that we come forth now to bring this understanding to the world again. It has been buried for many years, and it is the time of a cycle of regeneration. Now, this is what the cherubim say. This is what we're going to be working with. This is what we're going to be asking them to show us, how we can bring forth this healing, because it is a cycle of regeneration. We know that the cycles of the cosmos are intensifying their energy upon this planet. We feel it. We know it in our bodies. We've had to do a lot of clearing. Some of it is stuck energy in the emotional body. That energy body that is very close to the physical. Past lifetime memories. We've had to release, because maybe at times of great trauma, it was stuck energy that we hadn't released. And so we know that this energy is upon us. Our bodies are feeling it. We're remembering things from the past. We are going through emotions that we don't always understand, but we have to work with. And so you might say this is the first of a meeting between what is in the earth records, what is in earth energy and sacred sites, and what we can bring forth so that we can remember again who and what we are. Right now, the cosmos is cooperating with us. It is bringing forth the energies. This is, again, a high point when those gifts that we haven't seen for a long time are going to be available to us once more. I welcome it, as I know you welcome it. And sometimes we hear news that is not so uplifting. But behind that, or rather shall I say, even though that is occurring, that is just one part that we don't have to pay attention to. We can concentrate on what we know is truly beautiful, truly ours. I know I'm ready for it, and I know that you are. And so until the next time, this is Carolyn Evers. We will have installment two of this. Glad to be with you. Have fun. Talk to you soon. Goodbye for now.